passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I just don't understand why you're treating the men's champion differently than the women's champion. Do you value Brock Lesnar more than you value me?
It never occurred to me to compare you and Brock. I feel like you're trying to weasel your way out of this match, but I'll tell you what. I'm not going to make the decision. I'm going to ask the audience. I'm going to ask you a simple yes or no question. Do all of you want to see Alexa Bliss defend the Raw Women's Championship in the first ever Women's Elimination Chamber match?
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Rob with John Pollock and waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Rob for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Rob for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way, take the mic.
It is Rewind to Raw. I am John Pollock with waiting,
yeah,
here in the glorious post office.
Glorious.
It is.
Yes.
We've got cassette tapes here, Tomita's greatest hits, the music of the post office.
That is no lie. I mean, this room really hasn't been... I would say this room hasn't been used probably in like 10 years before we started doing podcasts here again.
I think everyone's house has a room like that.
Oh, yeah.
But what great use were you getting out of this?
This was like my brother's music production room. In fact, I'll even pan around for the post-production people,
yeah,
so that they can see.
Those that are watching this on video, yeah, which you can do so if you are a post-production.
Double post-production user. So anyway, yeah.
Can we get a shot of that window? Like what an odd window.
Well, it's a basement window. What's so odd about that?
I don't think I've ever noticed it before.
Okay.
And I face it every week.
So, yeah, I don't know how many people know, but, like, my brother's, a music producer.
Huge music producer. Both of your brothers
are.
I don't
know about huge. One is more of a hobbyist. But, anyway, so...
The other one is...
So, anyway, huge. But that's just kind of... He's big. He's slimmed down a lot. Is that what you're trying to say? He's fat?
No, I was trying to I meant it in like the figurative sense. I don't even know what your brother looks like.
Oh, gotcha. Anyway, so yeah, this was kind of a room where they used to do a lot of music in. And what's so funny?
It's like how defensive you got of your brother. Like, is he a larger man?
You said huge with a smirk. So what? That was my assumption.
I'm always just fucking around.
Okay.
Is he a heavy guy?
I wouldn't say he's heavy. He's actually slimmed down a lot.
As I can tell from your response there. That's what you just said.
Right. But at one time he might have been.
Okay. Yeah. Well, good for him then.
I didn't watch Raw to talk about this.
Okay. Well, let's go to the backstory of the room again.
Anyway, so this used to be like their musical production room. And I would say maybe that's part of the reason why. Maybe a lot of people are surprised, but like we're actually recording this on one mic, John and I. And to me, it sounds actually quite good for one mic. And maybe part of it is because of this room, because there's a little bit of soundproofing, and it's got low ceilings and carpet and everything. So
yes, we are the Lady and the Tramp of podcasting.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, if you want to make it awkward again.
You know what I'm still enjoying is the Christmas decorations in your neighborhood, Way.
Oh,
there are people that have just, they're not giving up. Our buddy,
while he's not inflating the reindeer, they're still there. He's still got some light up ones on his lawn that are like white with lights around them that are not turned on. And then he's got just the dead inflatable reindeer on his roof, which is fine. And then there's another house that's just, it's like two turns away from you, fully lit up. Fully lit up.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I don't even have to have my headlights on.
We're officially in April now.
February.
Sorry. February. We're officially in February now. In your opinion, what is the cutoff? What is too late? Like,
I think now is too late.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a game for me, I find, when I'm in residential areas, is that I look at houses, because my parents' area, too, there's a lot of them that still have lights out. And I think it's a mid-January thing. It's not weird. Mm-hmm. By February, it's like, you're just delaying, or you're just not going to take them down.
I think you could put them up in November, and then, let it run through November, let it run through December. First week of January, in my opinion, that's when they should go. They've had a good run. You've got your purpose.
Christmas ends fast.
Yeah, you've got your use out of them for the year.
I'd argue by the 27th, I think most people are, it's done, it's over. You get maybe a grace day of a Boxing Day.
But this is also the reason why I would never do Christmas decorations.
Because of people judging?
Because it's just work. Like, what am I doing this for?
You're providing great enjoyment for others. I love seeing these lights.
I don't give a
not
shit.
Not complaining. I hope your neighbors keep them all year.
I do a wrestling podcast. That's my Christmas lights. Okay?
You need to just cheer up a little. Get into the Christmas spirit.
What I don't get is if somebody is willing to go through the effort of stringing up their house, inflating these reindeers. Like, you figure that person would be willing to put in the effort to take the stuff down, too.
Yeah, maybe it's a hard thing to say goodbye to. As much as I'm a big Christmas person, I'm not... Once it's over, it's over.
Mm.
I'm not one of those that would find myself wanting to leave decorations up for a long time.
Do you decorate for any other holidays?
No.
Just Christmas?
I didn't even decorate for this past Christmas.
Not even Halloween or...
No.
Yeah. No. Valentine's?
I don't think anyone decorates for Valentine's Day.
It's true. Do you sell it? Like, are any other holidays big for you besides Christmas?
No. I don't really do anything for Easter. Hmm. That's one. What are the big holidays people would celebrate? Like, that's about it. Your birthday and Christmas. Those to me are the little, hey, here's a day that we acknowledge because this happens to be the number of this month.
You don't do anything for, like, Victoria Day?
I don't. A lot of people celebrate Super Bowl Sunday, which was my annual 2 minutes of football a year.
How are they?
I followed the score a little bit during the game. I watched the halftime show, and then the final 2 minutes of the game. This was a really close game, so I tuned in right as they were debating the winning touchdown for the Eagles, if it was going to be a touchdown, if it would be ruled a touchdown or not. And Chris Collinsworth, the announcer, he was thinking this was... He eventually said, I give up. I just don't know what the rule is supposed to mean. And
what's the controversy? I didn't watch a second of this
game. You're asking me to break this down. And I'm just opening myself up for every literal Tuesday morning quarterback that's going to contact me.
Give me your professional football analysis.
It was debated whether it was a touchdown or not. The guy was, I don't know, there's some rule, and he was considered a runner because he took multiple steps. Anyway, it was a touchdown. It was a touchdown, and it wasn't really that controversial. But anyway, it was made out to be a big play. So there's like 2 minutes or so left, and the Patriots have the ball. And what they've got to do is they've got to run the entire field and then get a two-point conversion to tie it. But it's Tom Brady, and it's the Patriots, and they got 2 minutes. Even the announcers said it's like, they've got so much time. And I was like, they're totally going to do this. They're totally going to come back, and they're going to tie this damn thing, and I'm going to be tuned out. I'm not sticking around for overtime. But they beat Tom Brady, and he looked like garbage this final 2 minutes.
Wow.
I didn't watch any of the other games, so I have nothing to compare the 500 yards he threw for beyond that.
Are you a football expert?
No, I'm just... Damn. I picked this up during the game.
That's like a professional analysis.
I don't know anything
analysis.
About football. But anyway, he was beaten. This is like what John Cena's storyline should be. He's won all these Super Bowls, but then no one believes that he can lose. But he's lost a step, and I think Tom Brady, he still had a very, very impressive game.
Gotcha. And then the riots began.
I didn't really follow all this. I saw a car tipping, and I saw people on a canopy of, like, a Ritz hotel that collapsed. But other people in Philadelphia are stating, yeah, people cherry-pick those events, but it's really all fine. But you tip a car? That's crazy. Do you think we would do that?
Like, if the Leafs won? No. I don't think we would do that for
I remember, like, during celebrations, people would jump on cars. And I'm sure if we go back to, like, 92, 93, I'm sure there was some destruction in city.
I would have said, like, Canadians are way too polite for that. But then, of course, the Vancouver riots were...
Oh, that was horrendous.
Crazy.
Yeah, that was very bad.
Yeah. So...
I don't understand that. I don't understand how celebrating is...
Well, they lost that year.
Well, Philadelphia won.
I know.
So I don't know what you're tipping cars over for.
They would have tipped cars no matter what.
Oh, my God.
They won or lost.
It's like, I went back and watched the Mixed Match Challenge, and watching Alexa try to pick... That's what I actually thought of when I saw the Philadelphia people tipping the car.
Right.
Said, hey, Alexa needs to follow them for form. That was a very fun match those two...
Yeah.
Those teams had.
It was.
Like, I would... It's not a show you really need to watch, but Braun and Alexa were fun together.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know who the other teams are, but I'm willing to bet that none of them will match the kind of the chemistry.
Well, you're going to watch this week. It's Jimmy Uso and Naomi against Goldust and new partner Mandy Rose. Mm-hmm. You will watch.
I'll watch it, yeah.
See, I just watched the one. I missed the last 2 weeks, so I watched them back to back. The Miz Asuka match did nothing for me, but I did enjoy Braun and Alexa.
And I thought Sammy and Becky were great, too. Even some of their stuff that they've done online, those two are actually very funny together. I didn't even realize, but there's, like, a fan vote to see, like, who gets a second chance to come back.
That's the new thing, is just people getting second chances in this WWE world.
Yeah. But I can see those two coming back in.
Before we get to Raw, I wanted to ask you, there were announcements over the weekend about Ring of Honor launching a streaming service that they've been talking about for a while, and All Japan launching a service as well. Mm-hmm. There's like 10 million streaming services out there, but did you hear about either of these, and are they appealing at all?
I heard about them, of course, because I read John Pollock's daily news updates.
Wonderful.
No, but I heard about them anyway. And you know what? Like the topic of... Well, first of all, for ROH, I think it's a long time coming, you know? Like, I believe that their library is...
Are they too late to the game?
No, I don't think so. I would say, like...
Because I think a lot of fans have their dollars committed, and it's a tougher commitment.
Yeah, you know, maybe a couple of years might have been better for them, but who knows what they were going through. I would say that they're not too late because, you know, people are starting to get comfortable with the idea of streaming platforms and their reliability. And ROH... If they have access to that entire library that they're willing to put up there, they hold a lot of, like, you know, some of the most high-prized equity in professional wrestling that is non-WWE, non-New Japan.
You're the perfect person to ask because you had to cut all of this stuff when it was airing on the Fight Network. What issues could you envision that they would have to go through?
Yeah, you brought up a great point on our message board, and certainly a big part of that is the music. That is
they would have to. That's a big undertaking
throughout all the entrances. But beyond that, chopping out entrances or even just silencing the entrances, I don't necessarily see that being.
Or do what PWG does, where they have commercial music, but on the DVD, you just get like a match board and you get them walking to generic music. Yeah. You can cut the entrances are not make or break. Like it's unfortunate you don't have Final Countdown.
Yeah,
but for the large. People want to see the Danielson matches. Absolutely. They're not going to just be subscribing for to see his entrance.
That said, though, it is still man hours just to process all
of
that video. And I don't know. Part of me wonders if, you know, I'm sure ROH realizes, wow, like we have Joe's catalog, we have Punk's catalog, we have Danielson's catalog. I'm sure maybe, do you think part of them is thinking about how they can, are they thinking, should we give all of this away? You know, are we kind of, first of all, how big of an industry is their DVD business right now?
Oh, it's minuscule.
Right.
Minuscule. Compared to, I mean, what they're selling now, it's tickets, it's pay-per-views, it's merchandise.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, photo ops at live events. I mean, those are... By the way, I actually spoke to someone at Ring of Honor today who they're saying Supercard of Honor will end up being, like, the most tickets they've ever sold to an event. And that's... We're 2 months out from that show.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, the announcement was made Friday with Cody and Kenny Omega. So they're completely confident this is going to surpass last year's Young Bucks Hardys match.
Yeah.
And that match was only made a month out. So here we are 2 out, and They're in a much bigger venue, too.
The venue seats how much?
I think it's 9,000. 8,000 to 9,000.
I really don't think they'll have trouble. Like, with that match, I really don't think they'll have trouble. And it's great to see. It's great to see for, like, just kind of wrestling in general. The fact that, like...
And it's head-to-head with TakeOver as well. Mm-hmm. So there's a competitive event in the marketplace beyond mm-hmm. just the other wrestling shows that are going on. Mm-hmm. There's the most commercial alternative mm-hmm. to that audience in TakeOver.
But because it's Cody and Kenny, like, I feel... That is going to be one of the most talked about matches, if not, like, for our audience, maybe the most anticipated match of that entire weekend.
Ibushi's on that show?
Yeah.
Tanahashi is still advertised for that show?
In fact, I could see a lot of people going to Ring of Honor, not going to WrestleMania, you know? A lot of people who maybe just want to be in town for all the other extra shows and not pay a ticket to WrestleMania. We'll be one of those people this year.
What are we going to do that night?
We'll watch Mania.
No, I'm saying the Saturday.
Oh, I want to...
I'll still want to see TakeOver.
Yeah,
but
me too.
It's, but live, I'm going to that. Well, both of us.
You can't go wrong with either. I feel bad for the people that are going to try to do both. You know, like there are going to be. Like
to go to both? I don't think you could go to both.
There are people... There are always people that'll, like, go to, like, maybe the first half of NXT, and then they'll go for, like, the final half of, like, the ROH show.
I don't think you'd be able to. I think it's...
Is it too far away?
Well, they're right at the same time. Like, ROH is at 7:30. TakeOver will be at 8.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll have
NXT is a 2.5-hour show.
Miss half the show.
Yeah, I guess you could go to TakeOver and make it in time for the final match, mm-hmm. though I don't know off the top of my head the distance between the two venues.
Well, anyway.
But, yeah, what an awful way to... Like, that's a really challenging night for you, isn't it?
Maybe
for TakeOver, it's like, I'm not big on having to see stuff live. Like, I'm going to go to the ROH show, and then I'll watch TakeOver that night.
Yeah, I don't think you can go wrong with either. You're going to have an amazing time, no matter which one you go to. But I think it's, you know, it's great that they have a streaming platform.
going to your point, though, it's kind of been established, like, you put everything up there. Mm-hmm. But for ROH, maybe, like, this is going to be something where the initial novelty is there. We've seen with the WWE Network, the biggest drawing thing are the newest pay-per-views. And the fact you're including the pay-per-views, that's a huge savings that you're going from spending $40 on a pay-per-view to $120 for the year.
Absolutely.
And it includes your pay-per-views.
Yeah.
And maybe you can stagger it that 2002 shows will go up after 6 months. And then you go year by year introducing them rather than putting up everything on day one that's overwhelming.
Yes.
And
I agree.
And then you don't have second and third bursts.
I don't think that's such a bad idea because I would say, yes, there is already that value just with the live shows. I think, you know,
I'd put up 2 years to start. I put enough up there to be a big appetite at the beginning.
I think just having the catalog is just something you can brag about to give people the perception that they're purchasing all this value, even though they might not end up watching it. I'd pay for Netflix. I don't watch half that stuff up there, but I know I have the option to do it.
Yeah.
So, but going back to All Japan, they don't have their 90s library, correct?
No, and that's because that's owned by NTV, which was their former broadcaster, which I didn't even put this in my head together. It was actually WH that pointed out to me that if Noah were to launch their own service, they could probably get the rights to the NTV All Japan footage.
What? How?
Because that's who they're involved with.
So NTV owns it with
NTV was the broadcaster that All Japan was on. And then when Misawa left, part of it was they got with NTV.
And they have no rights? Like, All Japan has no rights to their old footage?
I think it's a similar deal as New Japan with TV Asahi, where they launched New Japan World in conjunction with TV Asahi.
That would be crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Like, the thing is, I don't hear nearly as much about All Japan as I do New Japan. But, I mean, hearing you and WH talk about... a lot of the stuff you guys talked about on your New Beginning preview, it seems like All Japan is kind of geared to, like, have a bit of a comeback right now.
I mean, they have some tremendous talent. And last year, 2017, was a big improvement for them, attendance-wise, match quality-wise. It's a promotion that I don't follow day-to-day, but one that I'd like to watch more of this year as well. You've got... Yoshitatsu's been doing some stuff over there from New Japan. Yuji Nagata just came over for their Yokohama show earlier this week. So if you're just following New Japan, there's like a few little things there of like some connection to New Japan, but also, I mean, their Champion Carnival lineup is really strong this year. Jun Akiyama's coming back. He'll be in it. Naomichi Marufuji has been added to it from Noah. So you've got a really great lineup, and that'll be, the service is going to launch in time for the carnival in April. So that's cool. A good kind of jumping on point for people.
Accessibility is a great thing for any promotion. Yeah.
Well, it's time to get Raw as accessible as possible. Last week, we were at the Wells Fargo Center. This week, we're in the Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines, Iowa.
Wow.
Des Moines.
What a coincidence.
And after a huge demand wave, we have a new theme for Raw. Born for Greatness by Papa Roach.
I'm so happy. I'm so glad.
They also announced another official theme for Raw is Charge Up the Power by Goodbye June.
I don't know what that sounds like, but I'm sure it's amazing.
I can guarantee I know what it sounds like without ever hearing that song.
Do you think it'll have guitars?
It was the first thing I was thinking as I was saying. Can you pull this song up?
We don't know that.
Okay, can we just blind sample this?
What's it called?
Charge Up the Power by Goodbye June.
Okay. All right. Get ready, world. Here's the official premiere. The new Raw theme song. Goodbye June. Charge Up the Power.
I got my bike and my gun.
What the fuck?
Imagine it's like a instrumental.
Whoa! Jeez.
Oh, no.
Sorry, I just busted my fucking ears. Okay, give me one second.
We just got goodness. Charged up with the power.
Okay, wait, this is like
it's a live version?
It's a live version. Oh. This is terrible. This is why we don't do this live. Oh, God. We got a YouTube ad. Okay.
Well, there you go. This sounds like something I want to hear.
Well, okay.
Wow.
You get the idea.
Hey, they could be playing at WrestleMania this year. A duet maybe with Papa Roach.
Well, I can only hope. Anyway, that went terribly, but now we know.
There's your new music to hear every week on Raw. The show started with a Bray Wyatt promo, starting the show with him backstage.
Yeah, still no opening video, like no opening.
No, they're busy thing. At work with Papa Roach to have the perfect start to Raw with some images. Maybe they started on a package and then after Enzo, they were like, oh, fuck, just... Let's just shelve this for a few weeks before we have to re-edit all of this.
Oh, yes.
They might have put a whole video package together. Maybe it was all over it.
Very possible.
So, Bray starts the show. He says, Elimination Chamber is upon us. It is the home to his greatest victory. As 3 million minds went blank, he won the title at the Chamber last year. And Reigns is standing in his way. Reigns lost the Rumble and the IC title, and he sees Reigns as a failure and will put him out of his misery, and he will be waiting for him at the bottom of that spiral. Because he says, what's at the bottom of that spiral for Roman is worse than failure. Me.
Mm-hmm.
I am worse than failure.
Well, I mean, according to our worst of, he is.
And then we cut to Roman. This was very Saturday night's main event-ish.
Yeah.
He says that failure, he amazingly could quote Bray exactly here. He says failure is someone or something that can't deal with adversity when they're knocked down. He says he's faced setbacks, but that's what makes for a great journey. He will not be stopped. He's going to smash into Suplex City, and no one, including Brock Lesnar, can stop him. So, these are actually fine.
I like these. I think, like you said, they're a real callback to kind of how things used to be, where one guy cuts a promo and the other guy retorts all directly to the camera.
And I knew exactly what Bray was saying.
Yes, I agree.
He had a message here
that
I didn't have to decode or rewind.
I wrote that down too. Like, I knew who Bray was talking about this time. I knew what his point was. He thinks Roman is on a downward slide and Bray is going to add to it. I thought it was all effective. Certainly, like, it doing it this way does a far better job of achieving perhaps what they're looking for with these selfie promos. In that,
I don't want Bray doing selfie promos.
Yeah, that would be a bit weird. The cell phone would have to levitate, and then he would be able to hit the button, like
Roman, without touching all the humanity. Oh, my signal.
The Undertaker with a cell phone selfie promo.
What's the Wi-Fi
password? Anyway, like, no, doing it this way, I think is far better. It gives you the intimacy of the performer talking directly to the camera. And you're throwing a bit of polish and production into something that you'd expect to be produced by the WWE.
I really didn't have an issue with these. This was a concept I liked. Mm-hmm. If we're negative on the selfie thing, this starting the promos off at the start of the show, and then we go right into our opening match with Bray and Roman Reigns. The Raw announcer's desk is alive.
Yes.
It was back up.
Full recovery.
Jonathan Coachman says, it doesn't matter how you get into the playoffs, just that you get in. And the Elimination Chamber is like the playoffs. And WrestleMania would be the Super Bowl.
Yeah, kind of makes sense.
Sure,
yeah.
Fine.
Except did you have to really... I guess you had to compete to get in it. Yes, okay.
Coachman would be saving his better sports references for later. They brought up how Reigns eliminated Rollins in the Rumble. So in WWE history now, that did occur. Reigns missed, ran shoulder first into the post. Real issue with these shoulders. And Matt Hardy is backstage, chilling with his new t-shirt, watching this. We went through a commercial break. Bray hits him with a mid-ring collision, yells, "Anyone but you." Which is easily a 3.5-year-old reference.
That was their feud?
That was the whole feud.
Oh, yeah.
Anyone but you, anything but Roman.
Yeah, that's good.
Coachman criticizes Bray for wasting time, and this led to Reigns hitting a sit-out powerbomb. Then Reigns called for the Superman punch. My transmission cut out, and when we came back, Bray had a near fall because he caught him with a uranage. Sister Abigail is rolled up into a... he counters it with a roll-up. Graves compares this feud to Batman versus Joker or Superman versus Lex Luthor, which there's been a lot of comparisons over the years of Reigns to Lex.
Yeah.
But I think here he was being compared to Superman.
Yeah.
He goes for the spear, is met with a boot, and Bray hits the Sister Abigail, and this did generate a response for this near fall. And then he goes for another one. Reigns blocks, ducks the clothesline, spears him off the ropes, and gets the win. Dare I say that these 15 minutes of Bray Wyatt might have been his finest 15 minutes, at least since that little title win he had last year.
I don't disagree. I mean, I don't know about that. I'll have to, like, comb through, like, his past year.
But... I thought he had a good month last year before the Orton stuff got crazy. Yeah. But this, I thought this was a good match, and this was not a Bray Wyatt promo I hated. Massive win.
What you're trying to say is that this was a passable Bray Wyatt performance, and I agree with you. I thought it was a good opener. It gave the crowd a number of near falls to really get into, and they did. I thought the promos were solid to begin with. And overall, they took up a good 25 minutes of the first 25 minutes of Raw that were pretty good.
Matt Hardy appeared after Roman had left. He's behind Bray, chanting delete, and he laid out Bray with a twist of fate.
Yeah, I mean, I see that they're continuing the feud, and it just makes me wonder why they did the match and the clean finish at Raw 25 for nothing.
Matt was going down his own spiral to insanity.
The loss didn't play into anything else following. You know, they just went on to the Rumble where they continued to have interaction. Now you're trying to build to the match again.
Maybe much like most people are treating that Undertaker promo, they want the match too to be something that you've never referenced or remember.
Right. Been deleted.
Probably that whole night for most at the Manhattan Center, save for one. Jason Jordan's in the locker room, and Seth Rollins walks in, brings up Jordan's injuries that he's been reading about all over the place, and Rollins is wearing Iowa's own, as he was here in his home state.
Yeah.
Davenport's own Seth Rollins.
He's got an Iowa's own Seth Rollins custom shirt.
Yes.
That's pretty cool.
Not as cool as Iowa Zach. $5.
Huh?
Remember that line from Saved by the Bell when Slater's with his the drill sergeant dad, the dad who's in the army, and no. Slater can't tell him that he wants to go wrestle at Iowa instead of joining the army like his dad wants him to. So Zach goes, "Tell him about Iowa." "What's that? What about Iowa?" "Iowa Zach, $10. He's like, oh.
I'm more lost in the football conversation.
Oh, come on. As many people are correcting me on whatever football errors I made, they're all like saying, but that was a good reference right now. So, Jordan's been medically cleared. Okay? He's been medically cleared.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Rollins says, well, it's about them tonight as a team because they have a chance to win the tag titles back from Cesaro. Few mixed-matched challenge promos. Goldust with Mandy and Jimmy and Naomi doing impressions of Goldust.
Yeah, yeah. Did you have any thoughts on these?
I didn't have enough time to form a thought on these.
These are very brief. They get replayed a lot. So I would say it's a lot of pressure
for somebody. I only noticed these airing twice. Did they air more than that?
They air throughout the entire 2 days, I suppose, on Raw and all throughout SmackDown. So by the end of them, I feel like I've seen them so many times.
Do you think that's effective? Well, they're clearly not, because every week these numbers are plummeting for the live viewing.
I don't think the promos are very good, you know? And again, they look so shitty being shot on a selfie thing. It's hard to, like, add replay value to any promo. And I can't say that these really do that great of a job.
Yeah, we got another 2 months of this tournament.
Okay.
The Revival came out after the Balor Club had entered the ring, and we were set for a one-on-one match. Dawson is with Wilder and says that they are the Revival, they are tag specialists, and they suggest making this a tag match with Finn picking either Gallows or Anderson. That was it. So he picks Anderson. I want to know what the thinking was of, let's present it as though it's a singles match, but then we'll have Scott Dawson say, we're a tag team, so let's make it a tag match, instead of this just being a tag match. Like, what was the thinking behind this? This was a nothing promo.
Try to explain it, okay?
Okay.
In my opinion, Finn Balor's a single star, okay? He's the guy who's supposed to have the match. They don't want to do Gallows and Anderson again.
Okay.
And so...
We have this allegiance. It's not crazy that Finn would just team with Carl here.
But then how do you explain why he chose to team with Carl Anderson and not Luke Gallows?
Chose him here, basically.
Right. And this was sort of... They're just an unusual team. And maybe they just needed a reason to create that. You're right. It didn't have to take
this year. Say, it was vital that Finn was part of this match. This was super important.
Yeah.
Okay. I just watched this. I was like, why did we have to go from one to the other? It was like, not bad, not good, just odd that this was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So Finn and Carl took on the Revival. And did you know? Cole told us that the Balor Club, they go way back in Japan.
I had no idea.
Balor and Anderson, showing the remnants of a team, did double back body drops together to go through the break. When we came back, Anderson was in. He hit a spine buster on Dawson. And then did the somersault flip over the top to Wilder on the floor. And that set up Balor hitting the running dropkick and coup de grace pinning Scott Dawson.
All right, match. Fine for TV, but nothing memorable. I'm quite disappointed in the booking of Dash and Dawson. I mean, I'm pleased that they get so much mic time, but half of that air time and half of that mic time is them setting up their losing and just not looking like legitimate threats at all. They clearly see something in them to give them something, but I wish they would make them win too, you know?
What if they got like a outdoor interview segment?
What?
Dawson's Creek. Selfies, of course. No, they could have...
How about a restaurant?
They would need a throwback, like the Zach Morris phone or something. They wouldn't be able to do selfie promos.
How about an interview segment in a restaurant? Dine and Dash. I also feel like several weeks in now, the Balor Club just hasn't managed to capture a tenth of the cool factor of the Bullet Club. You know, granted, the focus is like only been on Finn right now, and Finn's value has really improved, but
I disagree. I think Finn has kind of come back to life after they did.
It was
look
the
at
Rumble,
the Rumble
really.
And the Cena match, yeah. And here... He was an odd part on this show that was just shoehorned into the show to just have a presence with no I mean, next week he's in this second chance deal.
I would say Finn is at least improved from how he was before the Balor Club.
Right? Fair.
But very little effort do I see them putting on Gallows and Anderson or the identity of the faction itself beyond they go way back in
Japan.
They
know each other, yeah. They know each other.
Like, at this point, it just kind of feels like Gallows and Anderson are just accessories to the Finn Balor solo project. And I don't know, it hardly feels like a real faction to me.
Balor and the Rippers.
Okay, enough.
Sasha is watching the finish of last week's match on an iPad.
Yeah, it's...
So she's clearly illegally streaming this at some third-party site.
She might have the network. Oh, you're right.
It's not on the network yet.
Yeah, you're right. Well, I noticed that even on a tablet, they like to watch at an angle.
It's better. It's better for your eyes. Yeah, I know. Don't do that retina damage and look straight on. Mm-hmm. She looks so despondent here watching the finish. When Bailey walks in, this is the 20th time you've watched this match. You're being way too hard on yourself. Banks says she was this close. She needs to remind people that she is still the boss around here. Bailey is facing Asuka tonight and asks Sasha for any tips. And Sasha says, I'm going to keep my tricks to myself. And then Bailey says, well, Elimination Chamber, it's any woman for herself. Just like the Rumble, bringing up that she was eliminated by Sasha. And Sasha agrees with this notion of how to approach battle. And Sasha asks Bailey, do you really think you can beat Asuka? And Bailey says, bitch, I know I can beat you.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think I really like the idea that both of them now are their focus is to beat Asuka. I mean, more so than even winning the title, you know? Mm-hmm. The title, whatever. I don't give a shit.
This is the real title.
I want to beat Asuka. I'm happy to see both these two get some storyline. And I'm even happier for the fact that that storyline is them being able to showcase their competitive personalities, because we haven't had that in such a long time for these two.
This progression for Sasha was so desperately needed. Mm. I think so much focus was on Bailey floundering. Sasha was even worse because I think she to me is certainly to me been better handled than Bailey, but someone that severely needs this life raft. Mm-hmm. And Bailey, I don't know what Bailey ultimately is going to end up with. I don't see this as a woman that is going to have much of a role at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Not this barring one. A Fabulous Moolah Memorial Battle Royal for the women to make history. But yeah.
I just never got the sense that they understood what made that character work in NXT. And I think you had a glimpse of it here when you had Bailey at the end of this segment say, I bet I could beat you too. She said that, right?
Can you imagine just Bailey just being able to say bitch once?
Oh, that'd be great for her. No, I wouldn't. But I think just her showing that competitive spirit and being somebody who never backs down despite being a constant underdog was the heart of the character in NXT, and I don't think we ever really got that to its full extent here on the main roster.
Okay, then we had WWE at its finest here. Michael Cole welcomes a man that used to be known as Rockstar Spud and is now known as Drake Maverick. Drake, a new name and a new future. Either go with the name or don't. This was infuriating to me. That why has he had an identity change?
Was Rockstar Spud that popular that they've needed to do this? Even if he was, they've never done this.
There are some that I felt, like with Kenta to Hideo Itami, I thought they handled that well, because to bring him in under one name and not address Kenta, it would have been an awkward adjustment. I think with Ricochet, the same thing. Yeah. Rockstar Spud, I don't know, it just felt so weird that it's like, if I'm invested in this show, why has this guy changed his name to Drake Maverick?
I'm willing to bet more than 60% of your audience has never seen this man or heard from this man before prior to this. They probably, most of the people watching Raw right now probably weren't watching TNA over the past 5 years.
Okay? There were 319,000 people that said, Spud.
Yeah, it was kind of odd.
It just felt so weird. That said, I thought he did a very good job here on the commentary of getting over the tournament, getting over the results last week, and setting up the matches for the next day.
Yeah.
I would like this guy to do play-by-play on 205 Live.
If he does commentary maybe two more times this year, he would already be on my short list of best commentator this year. Like, I think he's got a great energy, able to concisely relay whatever message he is. He seems like a good improviser. He just seems actually like he's perfect for this role.
He was very good here. So I really liked how he just went through everything. So Cedric Alexander and Mustafa Ali took on Tony Nese and Drew Gulak. And by the end of this, I didn't know how Cedric Alexander was moving. He got seated on the top rope and Gulak hit this flying clothesline. And they showed this in slow motion. He just came down onto his right shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Graves said, if he does not have internal damage, I will be shocked. And for the rest of the match, he favored the arm. He still did all his stuff. He did a Topekan Hero to the floor, and then his big return with a springboard clothesline and lumbar check pinning Gulak. And his arm was down the whole time until he got on the turnbuckle, and he at least raised the arm. But I was just focused on this guy's arm because he fell so badly on this arm.
To me, it was the Sasha Banks moment of this week.
Oh.
And I've seen so many people say, like, she meant to do that. She meant to do that. That was perfectly safe. I'm not a wrestler. I don't know. It very well could have been. But it made me cringe watching it. I don't know if I don't know what the margin of error for that is, for somebody to attempt that as sort of a planned spot. I don't think this was planned.
No one is doing this in a throwaway 205 Live match on Raw to get over nothing. There was no focus on this arm. There was no way this was
To their credit, though, they replayed it like two times and got their value out of it.
Oh, so, this looked awful. I hope the man's okay, but I would not be surprised at all if there was some kind of injury here.
Yeah.
Kurt Angle comes out. This was the segment of the night. For some.
No.
He recaps the Women's Royal Rumble. And he says the Women's Evolution will make history again on February 25th with the first... with the first Elimination Chamber match. I got it all out there. Poor Kurt.
Oh, poor guy. How awful.
Okay. That's what 95% of people are going to focus on.
Yeah.
Because they were just feel like, look at all these things that he's got to go through. The Women's Evolution and, you know.
Wait a second, though. He's hired for this job.
I know.
He shouldn't be able to.
But I think what's in his head is the fact that it's got to be, it's not just go out there and announce that it's the Elimination Chamber. You've got to emphasize Women's Evolution and it's the first ever and it's a head trip with him, I bet.
I know.
More than anything.
You've got to say WWE.
Properly. I can't do that. Yeah. Then he's got to announce the six women who, with Alexa Bliss defending against, quote, the women's champion, former champion Bayley.
What?
The women's champion, former champion Bayley.
I didn't catch that. He's got to be. Someone like him must hate you. Because, like, you're going to pick up on every little thing.
Okay.
And he fucks up.
I can't 100% say this, but I want everyone to go back and listen to it. Because I listened to this three times, and I'm 70% sure the next entrant is, first time ever in a WWE ring, Vicky James.
You worked with her for years.
Vicky James.
TNA. He knows who she is.
Up next, it's Mandy Rose, Sonya Deville, and who's the boss? It's the boss, Sasha Banks.
Oh, he said who's the boss?
He didn't say who's the boss. He just said, the boss, Sasha Banks. And it made me think of Judith Light.
Well, I have to wonder how long Kurt will have this GM role after WrestleMania. I mean,
do you see him having a match? Actually.
Yes. I think he should. I mean, I think that's his value. I don't think he's great for this.
I forgot to mention at the beginning of the show that after our Raw review, I have a game for Wei.
Oh, boy.
Get ready, everyone. We have a WrestleMania-themed game. Okay.
Played the game.
Do you want? I want your ruling, okay, about Mickey Vicky James, okay?
Are you? Oh, you're gonna play it. Great.
I've got it here. Okay. Okay. So let's
put the mic up there.
Far be it for me to kick a man while he's
Who's gonna face Alexa at the Elimination Chamber match? First up, Women's Champion, former champion, Bayley. Next is Mandy Rose.
Here it is.
And the six-time women's champion, Mickey James.
Oh.
It's hard. I can't tell.
I would say it's...
And there's Sonya Deville.
I would say it's Mickey. Play it again. I need to
Mickey
hear it.
Mickey James.
One more time.
And the six-time women's champion, Mickey James.
That sounded like Mickey there. You know what? There's one more way to do this.
Sounds like Bicky. Well, you're going to slow it down on YouTube. They don't play sound. Go 0.5. Or even 0.7. Oh, back, yeah. Oh.
And the six-time women's champion, Mickey James.
I think it was Mickey.
I think I can admit
he fault. Did not mistake her name for
I listened to this twice. Mickey. You could see on the normal one. It sounded close, and he was not exactly giving me confidence.
Again, I feel bad, because, like, it's clearly at this point some type of speech impediment, and it's probably just tough for him to say certain words. But that's also part of the reason why I...
This guy had no issues with promos in TNA. So I have a hard time imagining it's not just... This is a guy that is... And believe me, Kurt was one of the people that... He wanted to be written for back in his heyday. Mm-hmm. He wanted to be written for. But I think he is just so much memorization that I think this is a guy that when he's given long speeches, these are not for the good.
That's not a problem due to memorization, though. Him not being able to say WWE is not a problem with memorization.
True.
But that's also part of the reason why I don't necessarily feel like he's the best person for this job, for this role at this point.
So that is our match. Alexa Bliss, Bayley, Mandy Rose, Mickey James, Sonya Deville, and Sasha Banks. Then he mentions that not part of this match is Nia Jax. And instead, Asuka will face Nia Jax. And regardless of this outcome, Asuka will get her title match at WrestleMania. But if Nia Jax wins, she'll be added to that match, and it will become a three-way.
Like,
huh?
I feel like there should have been some at least backstory to lead up to that stipulation.
What did Nia do in the Rumble that was so impressive above
nothing.
These others?
To me, nothing. I mean, I suppose you could justify it because if everybody else gets a chance at the title, Nia kind of should as well, right? And this is because they can't fit any more women in there, their way to give Nia a chance at the WrestleMania title shot.
Could you not have at least... Like, it made no sense Michelle McCool got all those eliminations that Nia could have just had this destructive run and it justifies her being able to challenge Asuka. You know what I mean?
Like, right, yes.
McCool had the most eliminations.
Yeah, person with the most eliminations gets a shot.
Like, that's something. Why isn't Michelle McCool facing Asuka
Wait,
here?
Wait.
She had a better showing than 90% of the people in the Rumble.
I don't. There are a number of ways you could explain it, but I definitely think it required some explanation why Nia was singled out of everybody for this opportunity. Do you think that it's possible that they turn that match into a three-way?
No, I think this is just a solid win for Asuka to heat her up as much as possible going into WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. Also notable was not a mention on this show of Ronda Rousey, which I guess you're somewhat handcuffed that you can't do anything, but I felt you shouldn't have dropped her cold turkey week two.
What could they have said, though?
This has been the story that has gone all over mainstream media all week long. This is the biggest story in sports.
They did that last week.
I think you... To go to nothing this week?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing?
They're going to have to go to nothing eventually. Like, what do they do next
week? But week two?
What do they
like,
do
not next week? Not to even bring her up?
I just don't
this
know.
This is your. This is the person that WrestleMania is. She is going to be the key to WrestleMania this year.
True, but the argument is that if she's not going to be around for such a long time, why do we constantly promote her on our show. Versus letting people forget about her, and when she's available, then that's when we'll ramp up the...
I think tonight they should have announced when she's going to be on Raw.
Do we know when that is?
I'm sure they have an idea. She films this till mid-February, so theoretically, she's free after that.
Such a far time.
Mid-February?
Wait,
it's the 6th? Mid-February is in 9 days.
She's back next week? In 2 weeks, then?
I would imagine she'll be held off till at least after Elimination Chamber.
Yeah.
And... They're in Anaheim, I think, the night after Elimination Chamber, which would make at the Ronda Center.
Yeah, that's perfect.
So I think that's where they are.
Well, you can't promote that. Hey, forget about this Elimination Chamber thing we got going on. Check out the Raw after that for the real main.
No, you just... Ronda Rousey's first Raw appearance, I would make a big deal. Like, to me, if the anniversary of Raw has taught us one thing, when you have something major, make a big deal out of it. And Ronda Rousey on Raw is a huge deal.
Maybe they will.
Well, it didn't happen tonight. Not even a peep.
All right, okay.
So there is our women's setup. Then Alexa Bliss came out and says, this needs to stop now. She calls this wrong and unjust by Kurt. And says that the expectation of the men's and women's success should be the same. So she asks why she has to defend the title. But the men's title is not being defended at Elimination Chamber. Brock gets to sit on the sidelines. And all the people were cheering Alexa here for making a great argument.
That's a good point.
She says, is it just because I'm a woman?
See, Kurt replied with some solid logic as well.
Yep. Angle says, Lesnar just defended his title at the Rumble. You have not defended your title since TLC. Mm-hmm. It was actually October 30th on Raw. But... October, nonetheless.
Yeah.
And house shows don't exist in this world. She blames Angle for not making those matches. Valid as well.
Yeah, true.
She thinks Kurt is sexist. And Kurt had this awesome comeback saying, it never occurred to me to compare you and Brock. And Angle then polls the audience of whether they want Alexa to defend the title at Elimination Chamber, the most leading poll ever.
Yeah.
They all cheer.
Hardly fair.
She just leaves, and Angle's left in the ring. So he pulls them again, and they were much less convinced about seeing this chamber match on second polling.
Yeah. It's like a child who doesn't get his way, who, like, is like, I don't know, just...
Let me ask all these people if they want free money. Do you guys want free money? They want it.
But beyond that, I thought it was a solid bit of back and forth, some realistic dialogue between the two.
Kurt got to be a human being here.
Yeah.
Interact with somebody, mm-hmm. talking normally, and Alexa I thought was very good here.
She was Alexa on fire.
Oh. Yeah.
She sounded great. Full of anger, full of passion, great delivery. Like, with Paige gone, I consider Alexa probably the best promo in at least Raw for sure.
Paige is on the show, eh?
Well, I mean active wrestler, but you're right, yes, she is still here.
They announced this earlier in the day. Cena, Elias, and Braun Strowman. The winner of this match will get to enter the Elimination Chamber last. Because as the announcers brought up multiple times, half of the winners of past Elimination Chambers have come in at number 5 or number 6. Half.
Okay.
So that means half haven't.
Yeah, okay. Sure. Yeah, that's good.
It's funny that in order for them to do this math... It couldn't have been that impressive a number that have been number 6 that have won this. So they had to include number 5 as well to make it sound very much more impressive. Yeah. Half!
Yeah, maybe number 5 is the best one. Come in at 5.
Yeah, wouldn't that be funny if like 90% of that half is the number 5 spot. John Cena did a selfie promo.
Another walk and talk.
Yeah, but a... back and forth.
Oh, he didn't.
What was going on here?
He didn't just walk and talk. He walked and then walked backwards and did talking all at once.
This was the moonwalk and talk.
I think he's just showing off.
Well, he outlined his plan for the road to WrestleMania as only he can and referred to Elias as the ghost of evil Eddie Van Halen. Who is alive?
Ghost of evil Eddie Van Halen. Okay.
I wasn't a Van Halen listener, so I don't even know if that's a
veiled reference. I think it just means somebody who plays guitar.
Okay.
You know, like, I could see all of them being, like, all the wrestlers being given the direction to, hey, we want you to shoot selfie promos now. We just want you guys all to do that. We'll just use them, put them up on your Twitter, we'll just use them. And then you can see guys like Cena probably wanting to do something to stand out apart from the pack. And his idea to stand out is to walk while he was cutting his promo. It adds some visual energy to the shot, but I'll say without image stabilization on the iPhone, it looks awful. Like, the man needs a gimbal or some type of stabilizer if he wants to do this. If you're walking and, you know, on the phone, it looks fine. But when it's blown up on a TV screen, the shake is really accentuated, and it's just awful.
I agree. Asuka versus Bayley. Coach made a joke about using superlatives, and Graves said, "You better watch it, Coach, or you'll be doing afternoon radio locally."
What? Whoa. Oh, good. I missed that line.
We haven't updated for those that are maybe not aware of the story.
Oh, that's a great line.
So on Booker T's podcast on the weekend.
Is it on local radio?
I think it is on the radio in Houston, but okay. Don't quote me on that. Booker explained the reason he's no longer on the Raw broadcast team is because of Corey Graves, and clearly is not a fan of this guy, and the company was worried he was going to attack this man, so he's now been moved to the panel for pay-per-views, and said, "This will not happen at a WWE event, but if I run into him in the street, I will get physical with him." I listened to this, and I think it is important to listen, that if you listen to the way he said this, while I don't believe he's sugarcoating his feelings for Corey, I don't know how you could take this seriously.
Well, he's a pro wrestler.
Like, I think he was very much just having fun cutting a promo on a guy who he clearly does not like. But nonetheless, you are threatening another employee here. Mm-hmm. This company could be pressured to take action here when this guy is on very public threatening another employee. I wouldn't say the smartest idea on Booker's part.
Well, I would also say, like, at the very least, they could just not use him on those panels, even, right? Like, what?
Well, then at that point, you're kind of out of a job, right?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
They could punish him that way. You know? Like, so, clearly there's no value to be had from working an angle with Corey Graves. He's not a wrestler. Booker T's retired.
No.
There's nothing at the end of this. I do feel Booker is probably playing it up a little bit to attract attention to his podcast, most likely. But yeah, like, you can listen to that commentary and really get the sense that, hey, this man is being embarrassed on live TV week after week.
You picked up on it a lot.
Well,
about Corey's treatment of Booker.
He's
more
actually
so.
Kind of, I mean, you kind of have to blame Booker for embarrassing himself a lot of times too. But what I never liked though was, like, if you're on a team, the idea is that you assist each other. You make each other sound good. And I never got that sense from their chemistry. It was always, if this guy says something stupid, then jump on him, you know, and make him look even stupider. And of course anybody would be mad.
And also worth noting that I'm sure a lot of that too is, I haven't heard the whole interview, but I heard some clips of Corey with Edge and Christian, and he pretty much outlines, like, to the voice in his ear of Vince. Mm-hmm. And just, I mean, that is very prevalent. Like, Corey has Vince in his ear. So it would not surprise me if very much it's, yeah, Corey is the messenger and Vince is piping in lines for Cole and Corey when Booker says something.
Whether or not it started with Vince, the fact that it managed to continue week after week suggests that Vince was totally cool with it, if not, you know, encouraged it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Asuka versus Bayley. And Asuka gets knocked down to the floor from the turnbuckle, slides through the ropes into a head scissors on the floor, and then goes back into the ring. Asuka nails her from the apron with a hip attack, sending her to the floor. They go through the commercial. Asuka then comes back with her running hip attack, a knee to the face. Bayley then sidesteps a missile dropkick and then runs off the apron, landing a knee to Asuka on the floor. In the ring, Asuka avoids the belly to Bayley, goes for the Asuka lock, and Bayley rolls backwards on top, getting a two count. Asuka then gets out, flying armbar, and Bayley is forced to tap. I thought a good match, but the crowd was just really lukewarm to this, and I think no one bought Bayley in this match, and I think that's kind of an unfortunate state of things for her character. But I think they were just trying to replicate similar to what they did with Sasha last week.
Definitely. I thought that was the main story here was the fact that Bayley, there was a really good near fall here towards the end for Bayley, and I imagine that they'll be using that in their storyline where Bayley will say, hey, I came this close to beating Asuka as well, so I'm just as good as you, Sasha. Something like that. Like when, so now Asuka has faced both of the horsewomen, or two of the four horsewomen, and like prior to her coming up onto the main roster, I think I and anybody, you know, had always pictured Asuka versus any of the four horsewomen as sort of these big matches that will take place on pay-per-views that you can build up to. Now, over the past 2 weeks, they've just been given away on Raw. It tells me that perhaps, you know, they didn't plan on Asuka. It tells me that Asuka's probably leaving Raw and that they probably won't have the ability to do these matches for too much time, and therefore hot-shotting him on TV like this maybe is better than, you know, saving him for a time when that might never happen. But in hindsight, it kind of also makes me wonder, would it have been better to, for Asuka's first match, instead of having her face Emma, be, you know, Asuka versus Bayley for her first match on the main roster, or Asuka versus even Sasha for her first match on the main roster. Instead, like, these matches are just kind of given away on Raw without much fanfare.
With the bar in an empty arena, refer to Rollins and Jordan as the pretty boy and the daddy's boy, and they showed no resemblance of teamwork at the Rumble. Tonight is Rollins and Jordan's last chance at the tag titles. The Miz came out with Dallas and Axel. 2018 is the year of the Miz. The constellation up in the sky looks like him holding the title. He takes credit for the big rating for the 25th anniversary of Raw. He says the following week he beat Roman Reigns again, and that coach Doug Peterson of the Philadelphia Eagles showed the team his match, defeating Reigns, which motivated them to beat the New England Patriots. Then he brings up Brock Lesnar, and he says cameras will be rolling on his new show at WrestleMania, and his daughter will be born just in time to witness The Miz become the first Intercontinental and Universal Champion.
So because you watched Total Divas this week, John, we know that The Miz's daughter is due the week of WrestleMania.
April 6th yeah. is the due date, and WrestleMania is April the 8th.
Mm-hmm. So I don't, like, they'll be documenting everything, obviously, all throughout WrestleMania.
They can't be flying Maurice to
I would hope
New not. Orleans.
I really would hope not.
Like, as we said, very detailed analysis on our Total Divas review.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is very unlikely she will have the baby
right
that weekend.
But
you're probably looking at a week to 10 days of grace period.
Let's say you're the father. You know, do you take that chance even of not being around when that window could possibly take place while you're at work?
Sounds like he will.
Yeah.
They're filming the show there.
Unless...
maybe they'll have a camera crew at home with Maurice, and that's going to be the episode,
mm-hmm.
or the two-parter, is that you're going to have dual camera crews
definitely.
As they're counting down. And whether it's a close call or not, it's going to be treated as though Miz is going to the ring, and then he's answering his phone
yes.
and getting on the red eye,
yeah.
even though she... I guarantee
they
you...
they will sync up the 1, 2, 3 with the birth.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, it's a kick out. Never mind. but I'm sold. Reality TV with that type of drama, I'm sold.
There you go. That's probably your first episode. That set up our qualifying match. Once again, Kurt Angle at his finest with the brackets here. The Miz versus Apollo Crews. This match was like all Apollo. He hit his standing moonsault. Coach just called him out on his unnecessary offense. To which Corey explained the extra power that Crews will generate for his standing moonsault because of the torque involved.
This was the second week where they had this argument, and I liked it. I think it's nice to debate these things, you know? At least they're talking about the match and the moves involved in the match.
Miz hit his running clothesline into the turnbuckle, but was then caught and thrown into the center of the ring. This is when Crews hit his standing shooting star press. Then Crews goes to pop out of the corner, is caught by the legs, dropped on the top rope, and then Miz hit the skull-crushing finale and beat Apollo.
Mm-hmm. Apollo looked great, and like you said, he was kind of the standout item from the match. He's been getting a lot of ring time on TV, and he's looked impressive almost every time, but very little focus in terms of his personality, despite having almost two managers at this point. I think he needs to just dump this Titus thing and just, you know, be treated like seriously, because I see main event potential in him.
Yeah, he had those great features in NXT, and again, it just goes to, this is one of many characters that you wouldn't be able to know one thing about. Mm-hmm. Rollins meets with Kurt Angle and Jason Jordan backstage. Jordan says he can't compete tonight. He started warming up. He felt something in his neck. The medical team will not let him compete. They missed something earlier. To which Daniel Bryan just ran in and said, "Where's the medical team? I want a second opinion." Rollins is pissed. Kurt says they're going to have to forfeit the match. And Roman Reigns was just there in his gear, ready, walked up. They nodded their heads. And that was our substitute.
I thought Rollins looked like a bit of a jerk here. This was a legitimate injury.
Yeah, you know all about these, Seth.
Yeah.
Remember when you missed WrestleMania?
Exactly. Your friend is suffering a career-threatening injury here.
This is the neck.
What do you know about Jason Jordan?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, what do you know about neck injuries?
No.
About Jordan? Yeah. I mean,
what has been reported about Jason Jordan?
Just that he's legitimately dealing with neck issues.
He's having, like, issues gripping.
Yeah, which would just be...
Sounds serious to me.
Something that probably, if that's the case, probably requires surgery.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, knowing all this, come on, Seth. Give the guy some slack here.
Yeah. It's like, come on, Seth. Stop being a bitch. Essentially, that's what... I do kind of like the subtleties in all of this, that usually WWE, when they want you to get a point, they just will hit you over the head, and maybe they didn't want to necessarily make the connection, but between this promo about Jason Jordan not competing with a broken neck, and then later, when Seth was accusing him, it's always I with you. And Kurt's three eyes. And Kurt's present for all these promos as well. Seth is cutting.
Do you think that's intentional?
I don't know if it wasn't, but I certainly picked up on it.
Interesting.
The broken neck and then accusing Jordan of only caring about the eyes.
Broken neck's legit, though.
Yeah, but I'm saying these are all little tie-ins to Kurt, which if they're subtle, they're good. Mm. They're connecting the two together. That
It's an Olympic year. Winter Olympics, though.
That's right. Pyeongchang. Are you going to be watching any of the Olympics?
Probably not.
No, neither will I. Then Sheamus and Cesaro took on Reigns and Seth Rollins. Reigns' second match of the evening. And basically they got the heat on Reigns for a long amount of time. And this crowd was really hot for Seth Rollins here in his home state. Who Cole even called him the hometown favorite. And then corrected himself saying, well, he's from nearby Davenport. So they hit the super white noise to Reigns. This was amazing. They pointed out that this was the move that Cesaro and Sheamus won the titles with. Nobody even thought for a second Reigns was getting pinned by this super version of Sheamus' finisher. Rollins eventually is tagged in. This was after he was knocked down. Jordan comes down to ringside, helping Rollins up to the apron, allowing for the hot tag. And then Rollins hit a suicide dive to Sheamus, then one to Cesaro. Cesaro avoided the stomp. And then Cesaro used a thumb to the eye. Jordan grabs the leg of Cesaro to distract him. And this led to Rollins getting a near fall with a roll-up. Then Reigns tells Jordan to get lost. Rollins hits the Rainmaker knee, which has a new name.
What?
Did you not hear this?
No.
Corey proclaimed this the Ripcord.
Oh yeah, I've heard that.
The rip cord.
Well, okay, I've heard that movement, the arm drag thing that Okada does, referred to as the rip cord.
Okay. Well, it's kind of a rip cord, execution. Like I can see that there's a connection.
Yes, I like it. I like it more than the Rainmaker knee. Okay, or
The Rainmaker knee is just what we've adopted because there was nothing given to us.
What was it? Was it like what is the King's Landing? What is that? Or King's Cross.
Well, he was the King Slayer, but now he's no longer Slayed the King. The King is back to full strength.
I mean, it's something.
It is literally something. Then he goes for, they go for the double powerbomb, but Cesaro pulls Sheamus to the floor. They're trying to leave with the titles. Rollins and Jordan, or Rollins and Reigns are just standing there. They were just going to allow them to be counted out, but Jordan stood up and said no. And he ended up throwing these hands at Sheamus and Cesaro, and this led to the disqualification. And Jordan immediately regrets this, and Reigns and Rollins are pissed. But I was going to say, like, what were you guys about to do? You were just standing there while these guys were going to walk out with the titles. What was your plan?
Yeah.
And when JoJo announced the Bar were still champions and have won by disqualification, they cheered like they were the Philadelphia Eagles. They were so happy on the ramp. They put their arms up when the announcement was made that they won by disqualification. Mm-hmm. Very underrated part of this match was the celebration by Sheamus and Cesaro. Yeah.
I mean, I thought the match was great, and I really don't mind all the stuff with Jordan because it told their story. I thought it garnered a ton of, I guess, live heel heat from Iowa on Jason Jordan. But I'm also impressed that they managed to find a way to include Jason Jordan in this whole storyline without having him wrestle a match. You know, he came out of this as the biggest heel of this entire segment, and the guy had to deliver two punches. So, I mean,
if you're Roman Reigns, are you really upset at this? Like, this is a lot to be taking on. WrestleMania season, I've got the Chamber coming up. What do I want to get involved with this tag title shit?
Yeah, you're going to have to defend it all the time.
Way above this stuff.
You're going to have to carry it through the airport.
But this is a burden.
Yeah, it is true. But in storyline, you could understand, right? But the whole thing is kind of done to, first of all, tell me that, hey, they still have plans for Jason Jordan versus Seth Rollins, if that is the match at WrestleMania. They're not writing him out completely or at all. And
well, clearly, though, not in the Chamber match.
Not in the Chamber match, though. But, I mean, Rollins isn't going to win it, so. Is Rollins even in it?
Rollins is in it.
Oh, he is, okay. But,
Oh, wait a minute.
He hasn't qualified yet, has he?
That's right. He hasn't qualified. You're right. Rollins isn't in it.
Yeah, because he just lost the tag titles, and then that was it, right? So, but the treatment is also interesting because they are trying to, to me, they're making Jason Jordan very sympathetic. They're making him completely well-intentioned. He just manages to fuck up because of his poor timing.
Sorry, why hasn't Seth Rollins been in a qualifying match? That makes no sense.
He just lost the titles. He lost the titles at Rumble. And then last week,
what has Elias done to generate a qualifying match? He was thrown out of the Rumble in seconds.
It's not based on your performance in the Rumble.
Okay, Seth Rollins has not received a qualifying match.
He might.
But Apollo Crews has. No, he won't. They've announced what the last match is for next week.
Oh, they have? What is it?
It's all the losers getting a second chance.
What?
Apollo Crews is getting two chances and Rollins hasn't got one.
That's not fair at all.
That doesn't make any sense in the world.
Well, I suppose
Rollins should be pissed at Kurt.
Rollins was signed up for the tag team division.
Is that how it works?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
it does. Reigns was able to double dip.
Well, they needed somebody.
Okay. Braun, we got a recap of his rampage from last week with the desk. And then Braun has his iPhone.
He got those hands and he put them on an iPhone.
Yeah.
For the selfie promo.
He'll be the last man standing just like last week. Same at Elimination Chamber. Same at WrestleMania. And Cena and Elias better be ready to get these hands.
Yeah. Love
it. Great catchphrase.
Love it. Love it. He's proven to be a pretty good promo all on his own. He's found a way to be like big and mean while still being fun and oftentimes funny without seeming like a joke. So, I mean, man, congratulations to him.
How long until they are selling a pair of giant styrofoam hands?
Brilliant. Like the Hulk hands?
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant.
People will pay $20 for those.
You can make your checks to John Pollock. And your address, anyway.
I'm way too helpful for these guys.
Are. Yeah.
I feel bad because I've been reading all about, over the weekend, I went through all these sports leagues and going over, like, the television rights to just get, a sense of where all these deals are for the WWE and UFC. Mm-hmm. And then realizing that these UFC and WWE performers will receive absolutely zero out of these deals.
Yeah.
Compared to unionized athletes. It's crazy.
Mm. Well, this is a, it's a fictitious television episodic drama.
Yeah, with apparently fictitious employee rights as well. I mean, and unionization. I think if you're a wrestler and you're watching these enormous rights fees. I think you will look back when you are older and wonder, what did we leave on the table as performers? And same for UFC fighters. Like, it's crazy. Anyway, what a segue that was from Braun Strowman's hands.
Let's talk unions.
Yeah. What a downer, nerd. Then we had, what was next? The Nia Jax feature. This was on Rollins and Jordan Argy backstage. Yeah. And this is where he says, it's always about I, and never about us, Rollins yells. Angle is in the middle here, saying that Jordan is legitimately hurt. Rollins regrets not legitimately hurting him. It's like, well, that's, who are you? Booker T? And then Kurt sends Jordan home until he is medically cleared and yelled at Jason.
Mm-hmm.
So this may have been, we probably can't do that physical an angle with him. This might be, if he's not around for the time being, this is kind of a mini write-off.
Mini
go write-off. Home until you get medically cleared. It's what's literally probably going on with him.
Very possible, but with the way things left off, I think that things were still so heated and unresolved that I would expect him to be back relatively soon, if not at least after
the elimination. I guess it's going to depend on how serious this injury is. Yeah. It's serious enough that he's not working here.
But to leave the angle on this note, okay?
They might be hopeful that this is something that's going to be, he's going to be okay with a few weeks off.
Mm,
could be.
Yeah, I could see
that. Like, they're keeping it.
They're still keeping it very much alive, so that when the moment he comes, like, it really still feels like this is Seth's Mania program.
Yes, and if it's not, well, we'll find out later during my game.
Oh.
Then we had a feature on Nia Jax, who is now the irresistible force. And she'll be taking on the immovable object at Elimination Chamber.
Vanessa Floyd,
who is Missouri wrestler Savannah Stone, who was trained by Michael Elgin.
Oh.
That was the identity here of Vanessa Floyd. There was a running avalanche to Floyd after she got in some kicks, and Nia yelled, "You don't do that to me," and then hit an avalanche in the corner, press slam as Floyd just yelled in fear, and a running leg drop for the win in a minute 21.
I found this a really entertaining squash. I think it took about a year and a half, but I think Nia has come a long way in conveying her aggression and her confidence in ring since she first debuted and started doing these squash matches. I thought this was way better, like, compared to like the first squash matches that she had. Far more confident in her promos now, too.
Yeah, and you just have these two unbeatable women facing off at Elimination Chamber to the point that I really wish they just didn't do that television match last month.
You could say that. You're going to say that about Asuka versus Bayley. You're going to say that about Asuka versus Sasha.
But at least that match, they're doing it at a pay-per-view. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, if you had had your ducks in a row and you, okay, Asuka's winning this. What are we doing with her in that in-between pay-per-view? I mean, you could have just got by 1 week of television and saved this match instead of, you remember the match, she's selling the leg. She's like basically on the verge of crying, which is so against what they're doing now with her.
Right.
That it just seemed like a very short-sighted, let's do this match for the sake of it kind of idea. Mm-hmm. Renee interviewed her in the ring. She stared at the WrestleMania sign. She's the only woman in the locker room that doesn't fear Asuka and that Asuka cannot beat. I'm going to mess your pretty little face up so bad, you'll be wearing that mask permanently. And when I'm done with you, you won't be the Empress of tomorrow. You'll be the Empress of yesterday.
I thought those were all good lines. I love the line about the mask, wearing the mask permanently.
Did you find it impressive?
Yes.
Sonya Deville took on Mickey James. This was my favorite part. Coachman said, "Hey, did you know that Sonya Deville, when she was growing up, used to dress up as Allen Iverson when she was a kid?" And he goes to Cole, "Did you know that?" Cole says, "Yeah, I did know that when I brought it up last week at the Royal Rumble in Philadelphia, hence the Allen Iverson reference." Oh, well, I was just reiterating it.
Second weekend, what are your thoughts on Jonathan Coachman?
I think it's a lateral move, if that, with Booker. Yeah. I don't think this guy adds anything. In fact, with comments like this, I mean, this is not a huge thing, but I don't get a sense that this is someone that was watching WWE television every week.
I
think this was a very, I don't know if this was necessarily they made a snap decision about Booker and this was a flash hire, but that's what it feels like. A guy that's quickly trying to get up to speed on what's going on, which WWE is something that doesn't, you don't have to watch 6 months to be up to speed on everything, but this is a guy that feels a few steps slower than Corey and Michael Cole on the product he's calling. It also, and 3 hours exposes that.
I also kind of get the sense that for Coach now, this is not as important for his career. In fact, it feels like a downgrade. And so I get the sense he's not necessarily as serious about this job as he was this first time around. That's just maybe me writing this, you know, kind of playing an armchair psychologist for this guy. But I just kind of get that sense. And I'll say, like, again, this third person on this team is completely unnecessary. Does nothing for the overall quality of the show.
Rose distracts from the floor, and this leads to James, as she was going for a head scissors, to be slammed down to the mat. And then it's Deville, just with all her striking. She's hitting knees from the clinch, attacking James with punches. And then all of a sudden, Mickey just stands up and just turns it into a roll-up and pins her in 337. This is the weirdest finish.
I think the idea is to, again, like show you how impressive Sonya Deville is, give her most of the match, but have Mickey come out with a victory so that she still stays alive going into the chamber. And then they just beat her up afterwards.
I don't know. I never find this stuff all that effective that, okay, well, we'll give you most of the match, but then you're going to get caught up. To me, it's just like, instead of just going all in with one, neither really gets over. Yeah. I don't know. That's what I felt after this. Mm-hmm. Deville and Rose jump Mickey, and then Alexa runs down, drags Mickey, and then they had this long shot of the two of them going up the ramp where Mickey just had to look in shock that Alexa was helping her. And it was one of those WWE, let's leave the camera on them for way too long, where they have to overact their shock here, Mickey does. And that was our conclusion here, as Alexa's trying to build up allies for the chamber.
Right. Yes, that's it. Paige showed up here.
Paige was here in their corner.
No update about the condition.
No, just she's quietly not part of this chamber match. And I think everyone understands what the deal is.
Perhaps tests are still being done.
Well,
nothing. No official announcement. Nor maybe
the WWE has not addressed it. Yeah. They recapped Elias's attack on Cena with the guitar a few weeks ago. Corey added that John did receive a modicum of revenge at the Royal Rumble, but still wants to get his hands on Elias tonight. So the Rumble was just a, you know, just a small piece of payback. And then next week, we've got a second chance fatal four-way with Finn Balor, Bray Wyatt, Apollo Crews, and Matt Hardy for the final spot in the Elimination Chamber match.
Okay. Well, it's got to be Bray. Or sorry, Finn.
Yes, right? I would imagine so. Yeah. And then Matt pairs off with Bray, and Apollo Crews will be on the kickoff.
Okay.
That what you assume? Maybe with Seth Rollins. Elias is in the ring playing his guitar. There were a lot of cheers for him, and he says, that's a pretty strong response from a no-name town like this. Ooh. Mm. Usually, he says, I just fly over small places like this.
Des Moines really isn't much of a name.
Des Moines.
Is it French? Spanish?
Des Moines?
What does it mean?
Do you want to know?
No, not really. The show's running long.
So he says he turned down the halftime show at the Super Bowl to come to this wasteland. And then he starts playing the song, and now they hate him. They just hate this man as he sings about Strowman. And he was just booed unmercifully here until Cena's music played. And then the audience was conflicted.
I'm like, the more I kind of watch Elias's shtick, the more I appreciate it. His laid back, slow paced delivery for these promos is a real strong contrast to your typical high energy, like vein bursting pro wrestling promos. He slows it down so much. I mean, starting with that bit of like very amateuristic guitar playing at the beginning of every segment. Like, I realized, man, we spent like 3 minutes each week for like the better part of a year now watching a man practice guitar like on live TV. Anyway, but it's all done to like set the tone, set the pace so that, you know, he talks slow and it just gets to the point where the crowd is kind of entertained, but then he breaks into another song And at that point, you're just like, okay, I've had enough of this. And they start to boo really loud. There's always a point in these segments where the crowd goes from like kind of liking him to not liking him and then really hating him. And I find that really impressive. They really, I think, stumbled on something that really works.
Cena, Strowman, and Elias, they quickly went through a break. Let's just go to the floor here, where Cena uses the steps on Braun. Then Elias breaks a guitar over poor Braun. And then Cena delivers an AA to Braun on the steps, but then gets nailed from behind by Elias, who tries to take advantage in the ring. Strowman eventually comes back to life, power slams Cena, goes to deliver one to Elias, but he avoids it, shoves Braun to the floor, and with Cena laid out from the power slam, he pins Cena in 10 minutes. Braun then returns. He power slams Elias. He power slams Cena. The audience cheers. He power slams Elias. He roars to the crowd. At this point, it felt like the cameras had just gone off, and this was like the post-match for the live show, but we were all still watching.
Mm-hmm. It's because the music died, too.
Yeah, and he just kept going here. He hits another one to Cena, another one to Elias, then his music played to end the show. Mm-hmm. Very long ending here.
I like the match. I mean, I've seen Cena and Elias together, and it's not pretty. Okay, but throw Braun in the mix, and I think it was a lot more fun. It was brief. I found it entertaining. I almost feel like they're giving Braun a little bit too much now. You know, you hit him with the steel steps. Was this a no DQ, by the way?
Well, as they explained,
three ways are no DQ. Yeah,
three ways are no DQ.
That's ridiculous. I can bring him an axe then. I can bring a machine gun, and you won't DQ me.
From that logic, why wouldn't Asuka just want to throw the match to Nia so she gets a no DQ match with someone at WrestleMania?
She's not a no DQ wrestler, but
then she can do anything she wants.
You're right.
Even though her chances of winning will drop percentage wise. Yeah,
33% to be exact.
And a third.
Yeah. Anyway, but I almost feel like they're giving Braun too much. Okay, you do the steps, you do the guitar, you do the AA on the ring steps, and this man just like, it takes him a while. Yeah, it takes him up for exactly 2 minutes. Then he gets right back up like it didn't faze him at all. And then he just goes on and does all these power slams. And the first time they did it, okay, these like multiple power slams, it felt organic and felt cool. But this time, I didn't even get the sense that the crowd wanted it as much as they had already planned this and wanted to give it to them.
Well, he's outside of Reigns. He's the next top babyface on the show. I feel he felt like the bigger priority on this show than Cena. Cena was
Cena was one of
an afterthought here. Who took the fall?
He was a rag doll who got power slammed multiple times. Yeah, Cena was not really any priority here.
So Elias will be the sixth entrant into the chamber, and that's what we've got. The two chamber matches and Asuka versus Nia Jax is our lineup for Elimination Chamber.
Overall, I thought Raw kept my attention. I thought it had some solid, nothing, you know, amazing. I thought Asuka Sasha probably beat anything on this show from this week. But I thought the matches were solid, and I thought there were some good bits of character development that furthered a number of their storylines.
All right, let's go to some feedback first. We'll go to Tyler, actually first, on our scale from the forum at forum.postwrestling.com. This show, on a scale of 1 to 10, was a 5.45.
That's lower than a lot of their previous ones.
Well, I can't say if you missed Raw, you missed a ton of advancement.
That's true.
Tyler from Orlando writes, I thought it was a pretty good Raw tonight. Iowa was a great crowd. Shout out to them. I was happy to see a Bray match actually entertain me in 2018, although I think a lot of that credit goes to Roman as a worker who often gains reaction to his matches. That is a fair point. I assume Finn will be the last member of the chamber, and I'm curious to see how they fill the rest of the chamber card, with the only matches announced so far being the two chamber matches and Asuka versus Nia Jax. I'm also thinking Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt will soon have a Hardy compound segment. Hopefully it's better than House of Horrors.
Do you see Jeremy Borash being brought in to work on Woken Matt Hardy?
I don't know if he'll have any involvement on the main roster. It sounds like it's going to be reporting to NXT.
I would bet Matt Hardy himself would be fighting for it.
I'm sure he is. It's possible. He's now in the system, so it's not out of the realm of possibility.
We got a Chris from Florida. That, in the words of Braun Strowman, was garbage. I really hate the booking decisions we saw throughout this episode. Nia's stip is the obvious one, and I could easily see WWE being stupid enough to end Asuka's streak just to set up a useless and boring three-way match at Mania. I did like Alexa's promo, though, and I have to say she was great in that segment, and honestly, she's absolutely right. I also hated the lazy booking and finish to the otherwise decent match with the Shield versus the Bar. Hopefully SmackDown is better.
Matthew from Australia. Watched In and Out today, but a few key things sparked thoughts. Why is The Miz in the chamber rather than defending his title? I understand they can now push an IC title defense on Raw going into Elimination Chamber, but to me it devalues the title. I really like the idea of Asuka versus Nia, and the Alexa face turn seems promising. I don't think that was designed to be a face turn. If they can pull it off, however, is another question. What does it seem like our card is going to be at both Elimination Chamber and WrestleMania? Well, that's... we'll get into our game.
We go to our next piece of feedback, who says, remember when Seth Rollins was the main eventer with great gear? Pepper Ridge Farm remembers.
Okay.
In all seriousness, Raw was pretty good and well-paced. Almost every match felt like they had purpose, and with Bray cutting his best succinct promo in years at the top, it made me more interested in his match, even though the winner was never in question. I like what they're doing with Absolution, but the crowd was pretty gone by that point, with the main event not faring much better. I hope that this is not the start of an Alexa face turn, as it would make more sense for that to come after being humbled in defeat.
And finally, Jay from Colorado. Another pretty tough edition of Raw to sit through. Booking was a mess on this show and doesn't give me high hopes for Elimination Chamber. Elias was definitely the highlight, as was Braun and Bliss. Bayley continues to make me sad every week. Maybe that's her new gimmick. She turns everyone into a shrugger. I don't get the point of having a second chance elimination match, nor do I understand the booking of it.
The shrugger.
Yeah. Oh, that's pretty good. Who do you guys think the mystery cruiserweight tournament entrance will be? Maybe this is where Rey Mysterio or the Hurricane come back. Oh my god, I just realized I'm actually interested in 205 Live. I give tonight's Raw a solid 5. Little kids getting John Cena shirts ripped out of their hands by adults out of 10. Did that happen?
I don't know.
Oh, that's awful if it did. I would never put Rey in that tournament.
Me neither. Yeah, no, I wouldn't. I wouldn't want Rey Mysterio near the Cruiserweight title nor the Cruiserweight division. Not right now. Like, his first match back could be big. It's main event level big. You know, you can do Rey versus Brock big, okay?
Wow.
And putting him into the Cruiserweight tournament...
Not on a stretcher again. Remember that?
Actually, I don't.
Oh, God.
But like, even just putting him anywhere near that purple already devalues him greatly. And hopefully Rey Mysterio is asking for a lot of money. And that's to his advantage, because if they're willing to pay it, they will not want to waste that investment.
His rate is enormous.
As it should be.
You better make it worth his while to come back if you're assuming that. And I don't think there's a prayer he's coming back for a full-time schedule.
No, I mean... that's fine. Like, to me, Rey Mysterio is somebody that could be a special attraction. I think he's that good.
Could you just imagine, like, just to put in as a loose end, like, you could put in... if Rollins has no dance partner for WrestleMania...
Yeah, awesome. Rollins, Rey...
Like, you can plug him into so many different
holes. That is a dream match. Certainly. The Hurricane, I could see on 205 Live.
Maybe.
Coming back for this tournament.
Okay, before we go, it's time for our WrestleMania game. Okay, this is where I'm going to throw out a series of names at you. And I don't want you to give us the answer of what you think they'll be doing at WrestleMania. What do you want to see them doing at WrestleMania? An opponent, a scenario, maybe none at all. Okay, so the first one is Seth Rollins.
What do I want them?
What would you like to see in your ideal scenario? Not what you feel they're going in a certain direction. Just what would be...
So for ignore all the story that they've told?
Something that's doable on the roster.
Okay.
That's not crazy. Like, he can't be facing Okada.
Rey Mysterio.
Okay, that's fun. Kurt Angle. And you can...
I'm really bad at these games, by the way. I'm just saying,
if you had an idea, and it can be no match at WrestleMania, but is there any kind of scenario that's intriguing? Because think about all the interest there was in Kurt coming back.
Yeah,
and I don't sense much for him.
If you ask me, like, for me, the value of Kurt is very much like a Rey Mysterio. You put him into these dream match scenarios with guys he's never had matches with, that you can sell on a WrestleMania. But not for a second do I think they see him like that. If anything, they'll put him against Triple H, you know, a match that we've seen, but a match that they consider to be of higher value. But you know, there, I think, like Kurt versus, I would say, any number of people, that is considered a good worker, I would say is a match that I'd like to see.
One that I think that they, it's almost too late to build it up now. It's not too late to do it. I would much rather see The Miz with someone like Kurt Angle, that you build up the feud between these two. Like, look what you did with Bryan and Miz, and that's mm-hmm. certainly an extreme example, yeah. but it could have been something you've been building for a long time, that it's The Miz just running this guy down. Yeah. I know you don't seem all that interested
in this. Are we just, like, fantasy booking here? Like, am I able to go completely wild?
Sure.
Okay. Kurt Angle, Chad Gable.
All right.
That's, to me, a natural pair.
Winner gets to be, if Gable wins, I get to be your son on Raw in a much better position than SmackDown.
Cool. Or how about Kurt Angle and Jason Jordan versus Benjamin and Gable?
Sure. Sure. Why not? Sasha Banks.
Well, I mean, I think from the looks of this, it looks like Sasha versus Bayley. To me, I would save Asuka for Charlotte, and Alexa Nia seems like a good match, so of the two. Maybe, I mean, I expect those few of those to be involved in tags. So, to me, who else is missing?
Do you think Sasha and Bayley will get a singles match at Mania? I mean, it's a long show.
It's a big show.
There's a lot of... If there's ever a year that they're going to try and get all the women on the show, this is it.
I would say it depends on the quality of the story that they're telling. And also, yeah. on the SmackDown side, how many women's matches are you going to have?
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, I could see a lot of matches taking place. But, I mean... I would say that's a good time to do some interpromotional matches, too.
Yeah, and that's an option, too. Mm-hmm. How about Finn Balor? Because he has nothing right now. This one, you can pretty much guess anything. Like, what would you do with him for WrestleMania? Mm. I don't have a clear-cut direction of where I'd go with this guy.
I think you could... I mean, if the Battle Club is supposed to be a priority, I think you can do something involving the three of them.
The New Day?
Yeah, the New Day. Like some other kind of three-on-three scenario. It's not necessarily a match that I am... Actually, I think it'll be a great match. It would be.
Where do you see Bray Wyatt on this card?
Bray Wyatt. I don't necessarily see him having a singles match. I really don't. Not this year. This is the coldest Bray has ever been, I would say, since he debuted that character. And so...
Could he be in the Battle Royal? Has he fallen to that level?
Ooh, that would be really tough.
Because that's where I would imagine a Matt Hardy ends up.
Yeah. And that would be sad, too.
From last year to this year? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they're not lighting the world on fire. They might light something on fire.
Yeah. I would say Bray versus Matt maybe is something that they had targeted initially for a WrestleMania. Maybe that's where you'll get your Chamber or House of Horrors. Mm. Here's what I would
That like. Seems a weird fit for Here's WrestleMania.
What I, well,
like it, an on-location
yes.
kind of thing?
Like, if you're telling me that, okay, Jeremy Borash is going to direct... A Hardy Compound video, and it's going to debut at WrestleMania. Throughout WrestleMania, even. I'm sold. To me, that's WrestleMania level. You know, that's all I've wanted from Matt Hardy. And if they want to guarantee that at WrestleMania, I'm in.
Okay, two more here from this game that I know you love. Hulk Hogan. Would he have any role at WrestleMania?
I predict for Hulk Hogan, he will be hosting a WrestleMania viewing party at...
Hogan's Beach?
Yeah, or a Papa John's or something. Or Pepperidge Farm.
And Bobby Lashley.
Bobby Lashley. I don't see him coming back until after.
I think this guy is perfect for the night after Mania.
Yeah.
I think he's... Why throw him in here for just to be there?
Mm-hmm.
To me, he's an awesome night after Mania opponent.
For who?
For Brock. Yeah. I think that should be Brock's program afterwards.
And who wins? Well, first of all, do you think Brock retains the belt after...
Maybe. I think he should lose, and I think he teases. I think everyone is going to be talking about this guy's contract,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's going to be, as always, they're going to be super tight-lipped about it, and there'll be speculation, is he going to stick around? And the next night on Raw, after losing the title, he comes out, and he goes to announce he's walking away, and that's when Lashley shows up.
Okay. Lashley beats Brock?
I would have him beat Brock. Yeah, I think I would.
Around.
If especially.
Or do you give that to Strowman, which they seem to be saving?
Yeah, they have, but I think if Lashley is coming in and you want to make him a big force right out of the gate, mm-hmm. and probably as an opponent for Braun as well, that would be where I would put Lashley, is the night after WrestleMania. So anyway, cool. There you go.
Thanks.
Have you enjoyed this game?
No, I'm just really, bad at this.
Hey, it's just random thinking.
I'm bad at like worst of, best of, like anything that where I have to encapsulate everything into like a quick thought.
No, I was just thinking really today of like a bunch of loose parts that don't necessarily have solid direction. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like Sasha and Bayley, I can definitely see them having a match at WrestleMania, mm-hmm. but the Finn Balor, Seth Rollins, there isn't like a necessary. Like Rollins, who knows? It's mm-hmm. like kind of dependent, I think, on Jordan. But mm-hmm. anyway, that is going to wrap up the show. But meant to do this right off the top, but we do have a ton of shows coming up this week, Way.
Let us know.
We are going to be back Tuesday night with Rewind a SmackDown. They have Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn on the show, Bob Roode against Rusev, and then the continuation of the Cruiserweight tournament. And of course, Way will be watching the Mixed Match Challenge.
Yeah, we'll be covering everything. These Tuesdays are getting pretty long. I'm not
a fan of this relevancy on 205 Live, yeah. where I think Hideo Itami and Roderick Strong are going to have a phenomenal match. Yeah.
I'm actually looking forward to the stuff after SmackDown more so than SmackDown.
Yeah, we'll see what kind of match Owens and Zayn have, if it's more of an angle than it is a full-out match. That's coming up Tuesday. Then on Thursday, the British Wrestling Experience is continuing as Benno, Ollie, and Martin Bushby will all be back for their bi-weekly show. Friday, it is a Patreon show with a review of Night 3 from last summer's Battle of Los Angeles tournament, and that's going to be from our Espresso executive producer, Tyler Crane. So you can join now at patreon.com/postwrestling, and all subscribers will get that show on Friday.
Yeah, I watched the show over the weekend and I really enjoyed it. It was kind of like, for me, like Bola represents such a great, I guess, snapshot of the hottest like indie acts of the year. And so for me, it was like almost a really great introduction into the entire scene.
Yes, and we'll chat briefly with Tyler on the show, who attended it live. So we'll get that perspective as well on that show. Then the weekend, it's a busy one, Way. Saturday night, I'm going to be doing a post show after UFC 221 with MMAJunkie.com's Mike Bond. So we will be up Saturday night following the card from Australia with Yoel Romero and Luke Rockhold. That Way won't be watching, will you?
I might watch that match.
Yeah.
I cherry pick my UFC matches now, and I usually watch them after the fact.
This is not a stellar card beyond that main event. And then Saturday as well, the double shot of shows this weekend. What Way will be watching for sure is the New Beginning card in Osaka.
Yeah. So you're going to watch. When are you going to watch
that? I haven't figured out.
Because John and I are going to try to fit that in Saturday afternoon. And
I might watch New Beginning live, or at least close to it. First thing Saturday morning, and then we'll get a show up. That's going to be a Patreon show as well, the New Beginning review from Osaka with Kazuchika Okada against Sanada, Goto against Evil, Tetsuya Naito against Yoshihashi, and Will Ospreay versus Hiromu Takahashi. So this should be this is going to be the big card of the three New Beginning shows. So their biggest show since Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah, and there's actually a show tonight. There's a show last night and tonight too.
Yes, yeah, they're running Corkune Hall. So actually, by the time you're listening to this, the second show is probably over by now. So that is all coming up this week. You can go to postwrestling.com, patreon.com/postwrestling, and you can get all of our updates on the site, at postwrestling on Twitter, all that great stuff. And we will speak with you on Tuesday night. Goodbye. Merry Christmas.